We have a custom before Buddhist teaching that the students have to offer a mandala. Mandala means perfect world, and it means all the money in the world, okay? So we take checks, credit cards, and mandalas. You can give a mandala.
I think it would be nice if our newest Sangha member did the mandala at once.
Chandra? Yeah, with the mic and everything. That way I can do the hand position. If you want to know the hand position, it's this very strange thing. You take your first finger, grab the second finger. Take your other first finger, grab the other second finger. The third finger is Mount Meru going straight up. And then the fourth finger, you grab with the thumbs. And if you can't do that, you just do this. But it's kind of fun.
Sangye Shingdu Mikte Owaki Drogol Namdar Shingla Jupa Shu Ilam Guru Radna Vandala Kamye Yatayami
Sangye
Chetam Soki Shoknama Dantyo Bardu Dagni Kyatsuchi Dagni Kinyin Kipe Sunamki Drola Penshir Sangye Jupasho
Sangye
Chidam Sophi Chognama Dantyo Bardu Dagni Kyatsuchi Daki chunyen ki persanam ki Trola penchir sangye jubashu
Sangye
chedam soki chognamma Jangchu bardu dagni kyatsuchi Daki chunyen ki persanam ki
And the second prayer that we do there, that's two prayers, where the mandala strange fingers is the first one, the second one is just like this. And the second prayer is just to make sure that everything that we do in this temple is going in the right direction. That we're all going to take all the knowledge that we learn together from the teaching and put it to the ultimate goal of reaching highest enlightenment or realization.
Okay. We're trying to time it, right? Because usually we just go on till 2 or 3 in the morning. When everybody falls asleep, we stop. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the name of this painting. Is anyone that did not get the painting? Where are the extra ones?
We gave them out.
All 75, the extra 75?
Yep, to 50.
Oh, okay.
Can you make more?
Raise your hand. She's going, we ran out again. We printed it twice. And so talk to Chinzo after the talk, and then she'll get more. Okay. In the meantime, share. Okay. The name of this painting is Saint Hava
Chakra.
Bhava Chakra. So Bhava means, in Tibet they call Sipa Kono. Sipa means life, okay, we're saying life, right? And chakra means wheel. So bhava chakra means wheel of life. Bhava means, in Sanskrit, it means existence. The word, it comes from a root bhu, which came into English to be. So it really means the wheel of being. And I wanted to talk a little bit about what kind of being. Okay, it's not just wheel of life or wheel of being in general. It's a wheel about our suffering life, about samsara. You could call it the samsara chakra also, okay? So, you know, Swamiji is often using the word samsara in the lectures, in the teachings on the Gita, and it's a common idea to both the Hindu tradition and the Buddhist tradition that we are living in a place called samsara, right? Correctly, it should be S-A-N-S-A-R-A, okay? Anytime an N comes before an S or other sounds, it should be N, okay? So it's samsara. And what is samsara? I mean, it's very common to say we should get out of samsara, right? We should try to get out of samsara. In our ashram, people are always saying, I don't want to go back to samsara, which normally means a 9-to-5 job. And is it that easy, you know? Is samsara that easy? What is samsara? Then I wanted to talk of, this is really a wheel of samsara. This wheel explains how we got into samsara. And then this wheel explains how we get out of samsara. Right? In the original text, it says, Tenjing Dang Jung Duk Dung Dang Duk Mi Tung La Dobro Jin from By My Trail, the future Buddha. He says, this wheel explains the chain of events that get us into pain, and then it explains how to reverse those chain of events. So the whole wheel, the whole time that we're spending this week in the evening, we'll be talking about the chain of events that gets us into problems, and then how to reverse those chain of events. And so the wheel is like, I don't know, like a gambling wheel, you know? And you can spin it one way, but you can get it to spin back the other way. And if you learn how to spin it backwards, it takes you out of samsara. If you let it spin its normal way, it takes you into samsara. Okay, that's the idea of the wheel. I wanted to try to convey what samsara means to me, you know, or how I would describe samsara. So I borrowed this aspirin from my friends. I think aspirin is a good example of samsara, okay? I got a headache the other day. I got sick last night. So I was ill, right? And then, let's say I had a headache, okay? And I wanted to stop the headache. So the headache is definitely samsara, right? We say gross samsara. We say obvious samsara. We say that dinner is a subtle samsara. Headache is gross samsara. And then the fact that you're alive is deeper samsara. Okay? But this pill, this aspirin, to me, is the story of the wheel. You know, to me, a bottle of aspirin represents our life. The wheel of life, right? You should call it wheel of suffering life or something, okay? So what does suffering mean to me? You have aspirin, right? And you have a headache. And then you go to your friend and you say, do you have aspirin? You know? And they give you this bottle, right? You shake it, right? To make sure there's something inside, right? And then you believe something about the objects in this bottle. You know, you have an idea about them. You think, if I open the top of the bottle, and if I take out one of those round objects, right? Okay, we use baby aspirin because we don't take much aspirin. We're not used to. So, you know, there's a little round pill in the bottle. And then if I have a headache, I'm telling you about your life. I'm telling you the condition of your life. I'm telling you what this wheel is describing. You take the pill, right? You take the pill, and then you hope. You see? Then you hope it will work, okay? And sometimes it works, and sometimes they don't work. And you know that, you know? We know that. I'm not telling you anything new. You get a headache, you feel sick. You open the bottle, you take out one of these round things, and then you swallow it. And then you just hope, okay? And then maybe it will work and maybe it won't work, okay? And then all of the advertisements on the television, on the radio, what do they say? They say, certain relief, definite relief. You know, all the companies who sell these pills, Tylenol, Advil, Ephedrine, all of them, right? They say, this one really works. What's that mean? Why do they say this one really works? It means this doesn't work and neither do the other ones. Okay? No, I mean, nobody comes to you and says, in our ashram we have oxygen in the air. You know? We have oxygen. You know, and you say, well, does it work? You know? Nobody advertises in the, come to Shivananda Bahama's ashram, we have oxygen. because you know there's oxygen and it works. You don't worry about the level of oxygen in at the ashram, right? But this one, the reason all the companies say it works, or it works faster, or it has more power, or the reason every doctor you met is saying, I can help you, I can cure you. They have to say that. They have to say something because they don't know. And you don't know. You get sick, you go to a doctor, you don't know if they will fix you or not. And you take this pill, and you don't know if it will work. Okay? And you get out of bed, and you don't know if you will get back in bed that night. You don't know that you will still be alive in the evening. You don't know. You get out of bed, you have a job, you have an accounting job, or you're teaching something, or you're supposed to get to a yoga class. You don't know you won't die in the class. Okay? You will die one day in the class. Okay? It's definite. In some activity of your day that had meaning for you, you will die in the middle of that thing. It happens to everybody. Okay? I always tell my friends, it's funny, they say, I said, where are you going? They say, yoga class. I say, why are you going to yoga? They say, I want to look younger. You know, I want to feel younger. I want strength. I want energy. I want flexibility. My bones are getting old. Then I like to joke, you know, I say, what time is yoga class? It's 8 o'clock. I say, what time does it end? They say, 10 o'clock. I say, at 10 o'clock, you're 2 hours older than 8 o'clock. You know? You do the 2 hours of yoga, and then you are 2 hours older. You are 2 hours closer to your death. Okay? The 2 hours of yoga has brought you 2 hours closer to your death. Okay? And that's all. And your wrinkles have deepened for 2 hours. Doing that. I went, Margaret and I did a retreat in a town called Anamala in India. And we wanted to see, we heard that Master Iyengar was nearby. You know, so we wanted to honor him. And we called his ashram and we said, we would like to meet Master Iyengar. We're nearby. They said, come, just come. And we got on this train, terrible train, with a couple of drunk guys in the compartment. And it was really tense and difficult. And then we had to fight our way off the train. And we got to his ashram, you know, and we sat down and they said, just wait a few minutes. And we waited, I think, 3 hours or something. And they kept coming out and telling us, you know, he'll see you shortly, you know. And then after 4 hours, they said, he can't see you, but you can go to the bookstore and buy some books, you know. And we were like, thanks, you know. And then we said, we heard that you had a nice library here, Sanskrit library. Could we look at your Sanskrit library? We heard Master Iyengar has a collection of Sanskrit books. And they said, yeah, he has. And you just go downstairs and you turn left and you'll find the library. And you can look through the manuscripts, you know. So we went downstairs and we turned left and we went into this tiny little library and there he's sitting there. He was reading a book, you know. So we just went straight to him and we did the whole bowing and we sat down with him. We spent like an hour or 2 hours with us, you know. And what struck me, I mean, to be honest, I'm not being critical, but what struck me was he's a very small man, and he's a very old man. He's very, very old. And then he pulled out picture albums and of his younger days, you know. He was showing us, look what pose I used to do, look at this pose I used to do, you know, look at this pose I could do, you know. And to me it wasn't impressive, it was sad, you know. It was every great, I took a class from Dharmitra recently, and he just had his knees operated on, yeah. So he couldn't do the poses. The man who did the 404 poses on the poster, all over the world, he couldn't do any poses, and he had someone else doing the poses. This is our life. This is the story of our life. You see, to me, getting old is one thing, you know, like getting old, having to get old is one kind of suffering, right? But I think to me, more painful is to spend a whole life surrounded by trying to get things that you don't know if they will work. You see, you get on the boat to go to the mermaid dock, you don't know if you'll reach there. You know, really, you don't know. You don't know anything. You don't know that anything you, I mean, to me, samsara is that nothing you do, even an aspirin, you're not sure it will work. You see, you spend your whole life in doubt. You spend your whole life in some kind of terrible doubt. Because you don't know that anything you're trying is going to work. You just don't know. You don't know for sure. So for me, it's one thing to get old, you know. It's one thing to not be able to do your yoga in 10 years or 15 years or 20 years. I don't know. It's everyone that will have a day that you finish your yoga, right? That'll be the last day that you do your poses. And so that's disturbing. But the more disturbing to me is while you're doing the poses, you don't know what will happen. You know, we have a friend, Bill, who is supposed to be here. He delayed. He can't come till Friday because during his yoga he hurt himself very badly. You know, so you don't know when you start a yoga class, even with Master Kashi. You don't know that at the end of the class you'll be healthier than at the beginning. You don't know. You don't know if you'll be alive at the end of the class. No, especially in class, no. But this is our life. We don't know that anything we try will work. Okay? We don't know. We don't know for sure. Okay? And the terrible thing to me, the horrible thing to me is you get used to it. You think that's okay. You see? You figure I'll cope with it, you know. If aspirin doesn't work, I have Excedrin also. You know, I do that. I start with aspirin, and then if it doesn't work by afternoon, I take an Excedrin, you know? And if that doesn't work, I eat like 5 chocolate chip cookies. You try things. What I'm saying is, to me, the state of suffering, samsara, is the state of not knowing anything. We don't know why aspirin works, you know? We can't say that an aspirin works. We don't know. You don't know anything. You don't know that a little pillow will work. You don't know. So, to me, the terrible thing of samsara, the horrible thing, the suffering of samsara, is that we learn to live with it. We learn to quietly suffer. You know? In deep down inside, after you reach age 20 or 25, you don't believe things are going to change. You don't believe there's any way to change it. You know? You just learn to cope with it. You know, they say he's a good businessman, or he's a nice swami, or this is a good yoga teacher. Why? Because they are calm when things go wrong. Okay? Or they can handle it when things go wrong. You know, when the ashram is not going smoothly, or things are in trouble, or there's no money, then a good teacher, or a good swami, or a good monk, they've learned to be calm. And there are even religions in the world, or there are teachings you get where the teacher just explains to you how to be calm when you're dying and things aren't working out, you know? You are in the act of dying. Everything you ever get, you will lose. You know? Your friends, your family, your job, your name. The last photo of you will be thrown out by somebody five years after you die, 10 years after you die. Somebody will say, whose photo is this? So I don't know. I think it was some relative. You know, really? No, you will disappear from the face of the earth. All the things you work for, Your TTC certificate will even disappear. I mean, all the things you struggle for, all the things you hope for, it's hopeless. It's hopeless. You can't keep any of them. You're doomed. Why do we try things? What are we doing, you know? You just learn to quietly quote, my brother killed himself. You know, my brother shot himself, you know? And sometimes I think he was more honest. You see what I mean? So, what this life is, this wheel is describing is a different way of life. That is, what the wheel is about is that it's explaining the chain of events that cause this life, that cause aspirin that sometimes works and doesn't work, okay? And then it explains how to turn that around. It explains how to stop that. You see? The goal of this painting is that you would reach a day when you took the aspirin and you know it's going to work. Okay? You do an action and you know it's going to work. And your body doesn't age. And everything you try, it works. And you have no more doubt. Imagine a life where you knew whatever you try is going to work. You know? Sometimes I get very frustrated, you know, I go, like I was in China. And I said, try to imagine a world in which all the aspirin worked, you know? And you did yoga and you got thinner and stronger and younger, you know, and you didn't hurt your neck. And where every marriage worked out. And everyone's job was perfect, you know. And then people care. They can't even understand what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say, this wheel presents the method of stopping all the uncertainty and all the pain in the world. It shows how to get things to work. It shows how to get everything to work. Nothing in your life works now. Nothing. Nothing works in your life now. Meaning, you're not sure it works, right? Sometimes you try something, it works. Sometimes you try something, it doesn't work. This wheel, the purpose of this teaching, is to explain how things really work and how to get them to work. So, it's hard. It's like, I don't know, what do you say? If one dog learned to read and then went to all the other dogs and tried to explain reading, right? Or if one blind person learned to see and then came to all the other blind people and said, look, there's something you don't know. There's something you can't hardly imagine. I tried to explain to you this thing called color. And then all the blind people are saying, say more, I don't really understand, you know? How would you explain color to 100 blind people? You see what I mean? How would you describe color to 100 blind people? Try to imagine a life and a world where everything works and death doesn't exist there. Try to imagine that kind of a world. And that's the purpose of this wheel. That's the purpose of this wheel. Okay? Try to imagine a world where everything works.
So take a look at your painting. We're going to talk about what we've been talking about is the monster that is on the outside of the wheel. The monster, as we said last night, is death. But you could also say that the monster was time itself. Like, you know, in certain of the holy yoga scriptures, like the Hatha Yoga Pradipika, we see the word kala, right? And it means time, but it also means death, because we're moving inexorably towards decay. And you know, we were down on the beach today, and we were looking at the beach platform, and we were looking at how the beach platform now looks like this, It strikes me that everything is going that way, and it takes so much time and effort and energy to try and maintain something like an ashram or something like my own body. You know, it takes so much effort to, why do I have to make the bed again every single day? Why does everything just mess up? Why does it all go into chaos? Why does the platform have to break and then we have to keep fixing it?
What if, like, we broke it and it just fixed itself? Like, why doesn't it work the opposite direction? Nobody ever asks those questions. Seriously. No, I'm totally serious. Like, why do I get older? Why do I do yoga and I'm trying so hard to maintain some kind of an equilibrium physically so I can live just a little bit longer, and yet still I can't quite do enough yoga and I still get older and older, and every time I look in the mirror I get one of these new wrinkles and one of these new gray hairs or whatever. You could just not look in the mirror, which is, you know, what most of us yogis do, but, but it's inexorable. The way that time flows, the way that this lifetime flows, things dying, things are constantly dying. And it's because of the way that karma works. It's because of the way that karmic seeds ripen. We say that the very birth of a thing is a herald of its death. Like, as soon as you see a seed ripen into a flower, that flower is bound for death. Even in the first moment of its breath in this life. And it's the same with any baby or anything. You know, because it's born from a seed and seeds wear out. It's born from a seed, a karmic seed, and seeds wear out. So, you think of the thing that you love the most in this life, or you think of the person's face that you love the most in this life, there will be a time when there will be a last day that you see that person's face. It's inevitable. There will be a last day that you see their face. There's always a last time in this life. Everything always ends. And it's so depressing that we try to avoid it. You know, even when we come to the Shivananda Yoga Ashram and we want to do a yoga retreat, we take our laptop. You know, because we can't stand moments alone with our own thoughts. Because, oh my God, we might realize what's really going on here. My dad had this terrible problem. Like, he's one of those people who, he knows everything about the body. He's been a physical person his whole life. He's very energetic. And he like biked or ran every day, and he had all these vitamins, and I didn't even know what they meant, but they were all in a little, and he started getting older and he started having problems. Like, he had a problem with his heart where one of the valves shut off, and then he had a problem with his lower back. And he couldn't leave the house, really, for like a year. And all of the family members just sort of went away during that time because they didn't want to deal with it. Not because they didn't love him, but because they couldn't bear to see this reality. They couldn't bear to see this inexorable thing happen and then have no power to stop it. So we're all sort of burying our heads in the sand, not really dealing with the way that things really are. That, like Ajahn Michael said, we will lose everything that we love. We will lose everything we love. And there must be some way to stop it. There must be some kind of way to reverse the process. And that's what this teaching is about. You know, reversing the process of that, of time, really. The way that our life flows, the way that things constantly die. It doesn't have to be this way. You know, if we learn this holy teaching, we can get to a point where we learn how to get younger every day as we do our yoga practice. We can get to a point where one day we look down and instead of a hand made of flesh and blood and bone, we see a hand made of light. We see an angel's hand. We see an indestructible, enlightened being's hand. You know, it's a process of evolution that we all must go through. We are bound for this. We have to be bound for this. Inevitably, that's why we're all in this temple instead of on one of those boats. Because we know deep in our hearts there is some kind of way out. There is some kind of answer. There is an escape from this constant birth and death, birth and death, birth and death. And it's not only, you know, this painting is not just about the macrocosm of an entire lifetime, but it's also many, many little births and deaths and many, many little cycles that you get trapped in throughout your day, you know. I was trying to think of a good example of a mini cycle. I like this one because it's something that I can relate to personally. So, say you're a person who has a lot of work on their shoulders and they don't have a lot of time because they're running around in the ashram all the time doing some things. And then suddenly someone gives you another big job. And you don't have time to do this job, and then you feel overwhelmed. So the normal tendency for any person is to try and avoid that job because they feel too overwhelmed to do it. So what happens is they push the job off onto somebody else, right? They try, at least, you know, I try. And then what happens is you burden somebody else with the job. Now, what was the real reason that you got overwhelmed in the first place? I mean, if we're thinking about karmically, what was the real reason to get overwhelmed? Because you burdened someone else in the past, right? You burdened someone else in the past. So what's your natural instinct is to burden someone else again. Again. And so then what happens is you plan another karma and then you get more overwhelmed the next time. You have less capacity to do a lot of different jobs because you've burdened somebody, and so now you have the seeds to see yourself even more overwhelmed because you overwhelmed somebody else with the job that you didn't take. So then you try to shirk more jobs, then of course you get more overwhelmed, and then you keep shirking and overwhelmed and shirking and overwhelmed, and that is a cycle. That is a mini cycle. So not only are we talking about the big, huge cycle of, like, yes, we all have to die, yes, this evil monster is our death and it's leading us inexorably towards death, but we're also trapped in many other ways with many other tiny little cycles. And that's also this wheel of life. And that's also something we must reverse.
Okay, I think Swami is going to get mad at me if I don't explain the wheel. So, we'll start. You know, in Buddhism, the first teaching that the Buddha ever gave is called they mistranslated it as the Four Noble Truths, alright? First of all, in the wheel are hidden the Four Noble Truths. So I'm just going to go over the four truths with you very quickly, okay? The first one is suffering, okay, pain. What I would describe it as a whole life spent trying to do things that don't work or may not work, okay? A whole life of trying to do things that may not work, okay? Pain. There are two parts of the wheel which are pain. Obviously, the monster who's holding the wheel, this is death. This is a suffering, right? And then all of the middle part, not the outermost rim of the wheel, not those pictures around the outside, but the next pictures in, right? You see people, you see little spirits, you see animals. These represent the different kinds of life in the universe, okay? And we'll talk more about them later. But this is also a place of suffering. So those two parts of the wheel are suffering. The death holding the wheel. And then all of the people and creatures who live on these worlds that are not yet enlightened. Okay? We are suffering. We spend our day in doubt and confusion. Your whole life is spent confused. You try things your whole life, they don't work. You say, now I'm going to really get my life together. I'm going to go to TCC. I'm going to become a yoga teacher. Then you go, and then you go back to your hometown, and you try to rent a studio. It doesn't work out. Nobody comes. You know, then you try massage school. And then after that, you end up working in a grocery store. And, you know, really, you don't know that anything you try, you don't know. You don't know. They can give you a certificate, they can't tell you you'll ever teach. Or that you'll make any money, or that you'll be able to continue it. You don't know. We don't know. So that condition, a life like that, is in the middle of the wheel here. Okay? That's suffering. Okay? Now there are 12 pictures around the outside of the wheel. Okay? These are called Dva Dasha Anga. So Anga is like Ashta Anga, means what? Eight links or eight parts of yoga. They call branches. It can mean branches, it doesn't have to mean. So Ashtanga is the eight components of the yogic path. In this painting, there are Dva Dasha Anga, meaning 12 links, of course, 12 links in the chain of events. Okay? There's a chain of events that makes the aspen the way it is. There's a chain of events that makes the aspen the way it is. And those are those 12 paintings around the outside. We're going to spend most of our time on the 12 links of the chain. Okay? These are a chain of events that get us into trouble. Luckily, the 12 links of the chain, which in Buddhism is sometimes translated as dependent origination, patityasamutpada, which is a big long word that I think is unnecessary suffering. Okay? You can just say chain of events. This is a chain. What does chain of events mean to you? What does the expression mean to you? When I say chain of events, what do you think? You can say cause, but what in normal life, what is a chain of events? Yeah, one leads to the other. Listen, you said that. Perfect. Okay? The Buddha said, if this happens, then this can happen. Okay? So this is called a chain of events. I think it's a good way to translate it. If number one happens, number two is going to happen. Number two is going to set off number three. Number three is going to set off number four. Number four will set off number five. And in the end, you will suffer. So you have to know how it is that you suffer. What is the process by which we suffer? What causes our suffering? Why doesn't aspen work every time? Why will your TCC certificate not necessarily work for you? Okay? Why? Because if you could find out, you could stop it, right? So we're going to learn the 12 links, Dva Dasha Anga. We're going to learn how they trigger this chain of events, 1 to 12. And then we're going to reverse the process, right? We want to get out of this pain. So when my teacher taught me, you know, he said, look, luckily it matches a clock, okay? Luckily, I don't know why it matches a clock. 1 o'clock, you see a guy with a stick, right? If you look closely at 1 o'clock, there's a guy with a stick. That's link number one. Then you go around like a clock, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 links. You come out next to the guy with the stick. Is a guy carrying a load on his back. He's got a stick too, okay? The load on his back is a dead body. In Tibet, you don't put people in a box. You chop them up into pieces. So you tie it on a guy's back. He climbs up to a mountain and he throws the pieces out and the birds come and eat them, okay? So we're talking 1 to 12, all right? These are the 12 things. Now, when my teacher taught me and he said, look, you can reverse the whole thing. You know, you don't have to go, you don't have to live like this. You don't have to live in a world of aspects that don't work. You can change to a different realm where everything works perfectly. And you know how it works, and what you want, you can make it happen. If you want money, your teacher says, make some money for the refugees. You can make $250 million. The fastest growing company in the history of New York. Okay? With no education, no knowledge of business. Okay? Just know the 12 things. I did that. Okay? It was bought last year by, what's his name? Warren Buffett. Okay? So you can, if you understand the links, and you don't understand anything else, you know more than all the businessmen in the world. And you can make anything happen. Okay, really. You can make anything happen. You can stop death itself. I mean, we're not interested in, we're yogis, right? Don't want to get rich, just want to stop death itself. We are not what? What do you call it? We're not kshatriyas or we're brahmanas. Okay. Anyway. Anyway, if you understand these 12, you can make things happen because you know how to stop them from not working. Now, I just wanted to say that it's not like you go 1 to 12 and get in trouble. Well, that's true. You go 1 to 12 and you get in trouble. You end up dying. We already said that, right? Somebody's carrying you up to the mountain. I used to think when my teacher said reverse them, I thought, oh, we're going to go from 12 to 1. We're going to go counterclockwise. But that's not the way it works. The way the wheel works is shut down number 1, you shut down number 2. Shut down number 2, you shut down number 3. Shut down number 3, you shut down number 4. Okay? So our goal is to shut down number 1. Okay? To shut down number 1, you have to, oh, by the way, the Buddha up here, it represents the path to shutting things down. He's pointing the way. He's pointing the way. Okay? That represents the third noble truth, which is the path to the end of suffering. And this mood, Chandra, which is traditionally very cool, if light is cooling, this represents nirvana or enlightenment. Okay, so Buddha is pointing, he's out of the wheel, see? He's not in the wheel anymore, he's out. He got out of suffering. He's the only person in the painting who's not being held by the god, by a monster. Okay? He represents the third noble truth. You can get out. You can change this world to a world without death. And he's pointing to the moon, which represents the condition of no more death and no more suffering. You can do it. People can do it. Okay? So he's pointing there. Those are the four truths. I get 2 minutes to tell you about the first name, which traditionally takes 6 months to explain. Maybe we have to do a little bit more tomorrow. Huh? Yeah? You weren't there? Maybe just... Okay. So link number 1. Each link, each anga, has a painting which suggests its meaning. Alright? So they are meant to be, you know, what do you call it? Reminders or symbols of what it means. Okay? So if you look closely at the first, at 1 o'clock, there's a guy with a stick. The reason he has a stick is that he's a blind man. Okay? He can't see anything. So that represents that cane with the red tip on it in nowadays. It means he's blind. So he needs a stick to know he's going. The first link of the chain, the link which causes all our suffering, is avidya. Avidya. Ignorance. Okay? And as Swamiji has said many times, and as our sacred books also say, avidya is not just not knowing. Like you said, do you know Shankar? I asked the other day. I had a Gita question for him, Shankaraji. So I said, I need Shankarji's email address. So if Rukmini writes me and says, here's his email address, and she puts the wrong address, okay? That's different from not knowing Shankarji's address, right? It's one thing to write Geshe Michael and say, I don't know Shankarji's address. It's another one to say, here's his address, I'm sure this is correct, and it's not correct. That's avidya. Avidya is an active active misunderstanding. Okay? Avidya isn't just you don't know. Ignorance sometimes means I don't know, right? You can say I don't know Shankarji's email. This is ignorance, right? But spiritual ignorance is the opposite. Spiritual ignorance is you send Geshe Michael email address, you swear on the Bhagavad Gita that it's the correct one, and it's completely wrong. Okay? This is avidya. Avidya is misknowing. Okay, avidya isn't not knowing, it's misknowing. Okay? I'll give you one example of avidya and then I'll turn it over to Mama Christy. Okay? We have avidya about aspirin. Okay? We have avidya. I spent years worrying about avidya. You know, my teacher taught me avidya, ignorance is the cause of all suffering. Okay? So I said, what does avidya mean? He says, you don't understand anything. Okay? I said, but you always say that, Rinpoche, you know? No, he says, no, this is different. Everything you have ever seen in your life, you misunderstood it. Everything. We used to sit in this little classroom that he taught us in this little, we built the classroom for him. And then we have to sit in this little classroom. There was a door to the kitchen. So I was always looking at the door during the class because I wanted to go to the kitchen and after the class and have some refreshments, you know? Because he like a good guru, he gave us little rewards after class, you know? So we stayed in class. Then I was always looking at the door. And then one night I'm looking at the door and I'm saying, what does a video mean? Am I having a video right now? Am I ignorant about the door? You know, what does that mean? So I go to Rinpoche, you know, I say, do I have ignorance about the door? He says, you do. I said, well, just tell me what I'm doing wrong, and then I'll stop. You know, it's simple. Tell me what, I'm looking at the door, Rinpoche. Is there a door there? Yes, there's a door there. Does it work like a door? Yeah, it kind of works like a door. So what am I doing wrong about the door? Just, don't give me philosophy. Just tell me what I'm doing wrong and I'll stop doing it. I won't have a video and the wheel will stop and then I'll be happy, you know? And then he said, okay, an aspirin. I'll just give you one example of a video, okay? This aspirin, I was looking at the bottle here. I can't read the small print anymore due to old age. Anyway, somewhere here it's going to say active ingredient, okay? They put different fillers, right? They put just, I don't know, calcium and stuff. And then there's an active ingredient, okay? There's a chemical inside the aspirin that makes it work. That's why they call it what? It's why they call it active. Yeah. No, it's why they call that ingredient is active. The other ingredients are inert, okay? There's one ingredient which is active, okay? So that's the thing in the aspirin that makes it work. Got it? Right? Just say yes.
Yes.
Then
yes.
You get longer.
Yeah.
Okay. But there's a problem. It's not active all the time. Right? Sometimes it's active and sometimes it's not active. Right? And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't work. So the active ingredient in aspirin is not the active ingredient in aspirin. Okay? You must start to grapple with this. You have 9 days to figure it out. Well, 8, 7. Okay? You have 7 days to figure it out. Something, the thing in this aspirin that makes it work isn't in the aspirin. It's not the chemical inside the aspirin. Because some people take it and it doesn't work. Other people take it and it does work. There is something in it that helps it work, but it's not in the pill. Okay? It's not in the pill. I'm giving you the first stage of breaking down your ignorance. Okay? I'm giving you a clue to avidya. Okay? If you break the first link, you free yourself from the last link, which is death itself. If you understand about the pill, you can stop death itself. That's my proposal. And also you can have aspirin that works. Okay? The active ingredient in aspirin, the thing that makes it work, is not inside the aspirin. We'll keep going on that. Okay?
So I get to do the second link, which is 2 o'clock on your wheel of life. There's a guy reaching into a hole. Actually, he's making a pot. So a guy making pots is the second one. And we call this link in Tibetan Duje Kile. Duje is samskara in Sanskrit, and most people here probably are familiar with the word samskara. Lay is karma. So it's the type of karma that's a samskara, meaning it's fresh karma, what we translate as making fresh karma. So just after ignorance happens, this happens, right? Just after you think that the aspirin has something inherent inside of it that's going to make your headache go away, what do? You take one. And then you make your, and then you go from link number one to link number two. So, link number one, you are looking at the aspirin in some sort of stupid way. You are thinking that the aspirin has some kind of power in and of itself to make your headache go away. Link number two, because you believe that, because you are in avidya, you take the aspirin. And then the wheel of life continues. And then you are pulled inexorably toward your death. And then time continues. And that whole chaos then continues. And that's why our lifetime is like that. Is because we go from step one to step two. This is actually, like, the first two steps are actually the most crucial steps of the whole Wheel of Life. You know, we've done this before. We've done this before in our classes here in the ashram. You know, we did it with the ice cream, right? You go into the boutique. Remember, everybody, you can do it for me. It's like, you go into the boutique, you want, you know, your favorite ice cream. There's one scoop left. The person behind you also wants that ice cream. And what do you do?
What flavor?
I don't know. It's your favorite. That's why I didn't want to say
it. Chocolate.
They don't have that. Chocolate? Okay. Pralines and cream.
Chocolate.
Oh, she likes chocolate. Okay, so it's chocolate ice cream, and the lady said there's one left, but you know the person behind you wants it because they said, oh, I hope they have chocolate ice cream, and you, loud enough for you to hear them. And, so, in our ignorance, we take the last chocolate ice cream. In our ignorance, we take the last chocolate ice cream. Because we think that, that's how to get chocolate ice cream. We take the last one. And so we continue cycling the wheel. So in a sense, ignorance is responsible for all of the negative things we do. Right? And, you know, there could be somebody in the room that says, well, at least I got the ice cream. You know, yeah, okay, so I did something that wasn't so nice, but at least I got the ice cream. I mean, live in the moment. And if you were in the position of not being such a spiritual or nice person and you wanted instant gratification, should you take the ice cream? The thing is, if you had the karmic seed to get the ice cream, you would get it anyway. Even if you tried to give it away. And if you had the karmic seed not to have the chocolate ice cream, you wouldn't be able to get that scoop even if you paid double. You know, I remember a long, long time ago, we were going, it was in the evening sometimes in New York City, and for some reason we wanted a vanilla shake. For some godforsaken reason, we wanted a vanilla shake. We went to three places, we went to Burger King, we went to McDonald's, we went, first place we went to, the machine was broken. Like, they used to have it, but it was broken that day. Second place we went to, they were cleaning it, they don't want to make it for us. Third place they went to, they only had strawberry and chocolate. You know, it's like, we just didn't have the karma to get, no matter what we did, it was just so obvious. You know, it's like we could have gone all over the world that night, and we still wouldn't have gotten the vanilla ice cream, because we just didn't have the seeds in our mind to see ourselves get the ice cream. Alright? Then, you know, sometimes the opposite happens. Sometimes you are in the boutique, you know, trying to get toothpaste, and you don't have enough money to get toothpaste, but then someone offers to buy you a toothpaste, and then somebody else pulls out a free toothpaste out of their back pocket and hands it to you. And then suddenly toothpaste is raining from the sky, and you're like, stop, it's too much toothpaste. I saw this happen yesterday. I swear, it's true. I saw toothpaste raining from the sky for somebody, you know, because she had the karma to get toothpaste, and it just came from all directions. It was wild. So, seriously. So, you can't live thinking, I'm going to take the last scoop of chocolate ice cream, because you wouldn't get the chocolate ice cream anyway. See, the thing about ignorance is we don't understand that what we do really means nothing. Like, we're not actually doing anything. When we try to take the chocolate ice cream, we can't grab a chocolate ice cream. And we can't give a chocolate ice cream away. There is no way we can do anything like that in the present moment. Whatever's happening for us is happening because karmic seeds are ripening and they're being forced upon us by our karma, by our good deeds and our bad deeds in the past. And There is no way you can control anything like that in the present moment. So the things that we think we do, like take an ice cream, or even take an aspirin. You know, like, okay, I can see, Lama Christy, why taking the last ice cream is a bad thing, and why that would be an ignorant thing. But why is taking an aspirin bad? Like, why would that perpetuate the cycle of suffering? It's not hurting anybody. It's not taking anything away from anybody. It's a very important question. It has to do with thinking you're actually doing something when you're not doing something at all. Like, you can't take an aspirin. And you can't not take an aspirin. You can't take the ice cream and you can't give the ice cream away. All you can do is plant seeds for your future. You can't do anything that does anything in the present moment. Everything that happens to you in the present moment happens because of something that you did in the past. Everything that happens that you think you are doing now in the present moment to get something you want is just simply planting seeds for your future. So in effect, we're not doing anything. And that's why Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita talks about not taking action and not taking action. Because you can take the aspirin and be stuck in the cycle of suffering, or you cannot take the aspirin and be stuck in the cycle of suffering, because either way you're ignorant about the aspirin. And the only way to do a true act is to understand where aspirin really comes from. And break the wheel. Break the cycle of pain. At its root, which is ignorance. But we'll talk more about this.
If we live
to see tomorrow and you do too, then we can meet you here tomorrow and talk more about the rest of the cycle of pain. But just keep in mind, you know, the way that people like Lord Krishna or people on Nirvirti Marga, the way they live is an entirely different way of thinking about action than the way that we live.
Just one thing. People come up to me and ask me questions. So sometimes I was thinking to eat dinner up in the picnic tables, and then if you see me, you could come and ask a question.
Okay.
If you want to ask something about the wheel or about your uncle, I'll be there at dinner time.